Continuing our look at creativity, it's a classic case, our next case, a classic case of worlds colliding. Welcome to the lonely intersection of physics and painting. At one corner is Jackson Pollock, an American painter who pioneered the expressionistic drip method, a style that resulted in dramatically abstract paintings. Pollock's messy works repulsed as many people as they attracted. At the opposite corner are fractals. These are beautiful geometric patterns that sometimes occur at nature's smallest scales. You see them in snowflakes or rough patterns on a coastline. And it was named by a mathematician more than 30 years ago. Fractals have since become an integral tool in modern geometry. And here to tell us what fractals have to do with paintings of Jackson Pollock is Richard Taylor, a physicist who wanted to be a painter and then a painter who couldn't stay out of the lab. Welcome to the program, Dr. Taylor.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be on the show.
And you describe how you were torn between two worlds.
That's right. It's always been a sort of dilemma for me. I got a degree in art and also went on and had a scientific career and always wondered how I could combine those two careers. And studying patterns seems to be the answer to that. It's, artists are studying patterns, mm-hmm. and so are scientists, and so it seems to be a shared region. And, of course, artworks are a very exciting example of that.
And you published a paper years ago talking about your work studying Jackson Pollock's paintings. And
right.
That his technique and the way he did conforms very much to fractal geometry.
That's right. I mean, the way that I got into this was studying, actually, Jackson Pollock. And time again, there's all these references to his work being organic or looking natural. And even Pollock said, my concerns are with the rhythms of nature. So there were all these connections and hints that, that these complex patterns that he was painting were linked to nature. And so I thought, well, perhaps the answer is that they have these natural fractals embedded in the canvas, and that's the secret of Jackson Pollock.
And you were able to prove that?
Yes, yeah, so we proposed this idea that there's actually two sets of patterns in a Jackson Pollock painting. There's ones on the larger scales, which are created by his motions as he walked around the canvas, and then there's the others at finer scales, which are actually caused by the splatters of paint. And so there's actually two distinct types of patterns, and we proposed that that these are fractal patterns, and you can scan an image of the painting into a computer, do some number crunching where the computer looks at patterns at different magnifications, and those results are consistent with Pollock painting fractals.
Mm-hmm. And you pretty much say that there are fractals all over nature, just like there are in the paintings.
That's right. So, the word fractal appears a little mysterious and frightening to people, but it's something that we actually, experience every day. Common examples are trees, clouds in the sky, mountains, rivers. They're incredibly prevalent around us, and that's where my main research is, that given that on our daily basis throughout our lives we're exposed to these patterns, do we like those patterns? And further than do we like them, does it have a positive impact on us? And so our sort of research is actually chasing this basic area idea of, can you use fractal patterns to actually reduce people's stress levels? Then can you work with artists and architects, if you can work out the type of fractals that really have this good impact on you, can you talk to architects and artists and work about ways that they can then take that information and take those patterns and put them into their artwork so that people get exposed to them? This is a question because in the States today, United States society wastes $300 billion a year on stress-related illness. So if we can work to kind of improve that situation, we're doing everybody a huge favor.
I'll bet. I certainly agree with you. You think that in the case of Jackson Pollock, and I would imagine other painters, that there is such a signature that they leave behind in their fractal geometry that you can actually use these as sort of fingerprints. You can identify the author of the painter of the painting.
Yeah, that's right. So Jackson Pollock's attracting a lot of attention recently, but this idea is being pursued by a number of quite high-profile groups around the world, investigating very different types of artworks. So there's a big group in Holland that is looking at the European modern masters, painters like Monet, and then there's people in the States who are looking at early Chinese drawings and so. And they've all published these papers showing that you can, in fact, use fractal analysis to distinguish between different artists. And so that's going to be a very useful tool in the future. You know, the idea of scientific pattern analysis being used to distinguish between different paintings. And then you take that information and you combine it with all of the other information, such as historical evidence, the visual inspection by, you know, what they call the connoisseurs, materials analysis. And so if you throw all of that information together, hopefully then that will help you to distinguish between paintings by different artists.
And in fact, you were instrumental in identifying some newly found Jackson Pollock paintings and trying to identify whether they were real Pollocks or someone else's design.
There are two groups that have actually worked on Pollock paintings and have shown that they can distinguish between those paintings. And like I say, you know, the important thing is for, you know, a group of people to actually get together and reach a consensus. And, you know, that really is a fascinating interplay between scientists and artists.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones, 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Gary in Little Rock. Hi, Gary.
Hello. Good afternoon. Dr. Taylor.
Yes, Gary.
I'm wanting to, a sculpture I made, I'm wanting to decompose that into its fractal components. Can you tell me of any websites or anything I can go to, any computer software programs or anything that might help me do that?
That's right. So the most important thing, because fractals are about zooming in at high magnifications, that you need to get a very, very high quality photograph image, first of all, is your first challenge.
Yeah, they're self-similar.
Software packages available on the Internet that you can actually download, and that will give you an initial indication.
I have a computer program that will produce fractals.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it doesn't help me at all in how do I take something that I've built, created, or whatever, and then decompose it into its fractal components.
Yes, yeah, so there are software packages out there that will actually do that for you on the
Internet. Can you name a few?
Sure. Yeah, so there's one called Benoit. There's another one, even Adobe Photoshop sometimes has plugins.
Adobe Photoshop and Benoit?
Yeah, and that's named after Benoit Mandelbrot, who introduced the term.
Right. Well, I heard you say fractals everywhere, and I remember I read a book, Fractals Everywhere, several years ago. I think it was by Mandelbrot.
Yeah, I mean, it really is a fascinating subject because it spans the whole of society, from the arts to the sciences and the humanities, and you can see fractals. You know, they're incredibly prevalent.
Mm-hmm. When you created or actually scanned any of these photographs, and especially the paintings, and let's talk about some of these paintings. Can you actually pick up the technique using fractals? Can you identify not just from what's on the painting, but by the technique that was used?
You know, so a lot of it has to be combined with visual inspection. But let's take another example. There's a scientist called Richard Voss who studies Chinese paintings, and he actually looks at the brush strokes created by the artist and sees a change through the years of going from very sort of expressive to very simplistic brush strokes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can definitely learn not just about the patterns, but, you know, start to step back and try and learn information about the way that the artist actually created the painting. And that's as much, you know, a big part of studying art as actually studying the artworks, is the artistic process that led to the artwork itself. So, yeah, you can definitely work backwards. And that's the interesting thing from a scientist, because, you know, we're not just looking at these things as sort of abstract patterns. The patterns are a signature of the process that created them. and we're interested in, you know, for example, with Jackson Pollock, as to whether he had a particular type of human physiology which allowed him to create those patterns.
Talking with Richard Taylor on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News about fractals and, in this case, Jackson Pollock. Are you saying that, if I understood you correctly, that he had a certain kind of physiology? The makeup of his body allowed him to stand in a certain way to drop these gravity, to drop these drippings that he did all on the canvas?
That's right. So throughout the 90s, you know, we talked about fractals appearing in nature, but throughout the 90s there was a huge explosion of studies of fractals inside us, that many of our structures inside us, so for example the lungs are fractal, but also processes inside us, particularly ones that are automatic, that we're not consciously controlling, have been shown to have fractal characteristics to them. And one of them is human balance. You know, when you move yourself off balance and you're swaying backwards and forwards, those sways have big sways and smaller sways and smaller sways inside them. And scientists have studied those, not me, but other scientists, mm-hmm. and shown that the way that we balance ourselves is actually a fractal motion. So one interesting proposition, you know, given that Pollock was so dynamic, is perhaps, you know, not just Pollock, but perhaps, you know, increasingly we can explain different artists to do with the way that they move their, you know, hands, even with conventional brushstroke. Maybe you can learn quite a lot about, you know, the artist's physiology, and if they had any sort of pathological conditions, by looking at the patterns that they actually created.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see if I can get a phone call in to 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Robert in San Bernardino. Hi, Robert.
Hello. Greetings.
Hi there.
To all. This is very interesting. I'm enjoying this immensely. My comments, I called earlier, but regarding fractals, it seems to me that fractals are so pervasive. You know, my concept of it is that if you look at a mountain range and then take a piece of rock from that mountain range, you know, from the macro to the micro,
yeah,
the repetitions of the form are the same. And it
right.
seems to me that in the creative process, by the way, I'm I was an art history major in college, and I considered myself to be one that could not draw a straight line.
Right.
But I, through my studies and a particular book that I read that many years ago that I still use, "Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain" by Betty Edwards, helped me to overcome some of the difficulties I had in my creative process.
Robert, do you have a question? Because I'm running out of time.
Okay. Anybody hear of the concept of artist manqué? And what I'm trying to do as far as this the contest is to associate or connect my sketches with some of the central dogmas of relativistic quantum field theory. Any comments?
Whoop, I had to cut him off because we're running out of any comment quickly, Dr. Taylor?
I mean, this is not the first time that this has come up, and there's mm-hmm. a lot of discussion about quantum philosophy and whether you can reflect that in artworks and things. And I think that's a very fertile area, and I'd say to him, well, mm-hmm. go for it and definitely explain it and try and explore that area.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us, and good luck in your fractal and in your art side and your science side.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
Have a great holiday.
Thank you.
Richard Taylor is professor of physics at the University of Canterbury in New Zealand and associate professor of physics at the University of Oregon in Eugene. I want to thank him for staying up late or early, depending on how you figure that in New Zealand. Kimberly Jones is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Neil Rausch and Josh Rogerson in New York, and Linda Mack in Washington. Greg Smith composed our theme music, and we had help today from NPR librarian Key Molesky. Surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. You can leave us email there. Also download back editions of Science Friday on the podcasting. We're also blogging there, looking for guest bloggers for Science Friday. Looking for video. If you have some science video you'd like to send us an email there. Some science video you'd like to put on our website. Also, Science Friday's Kids Connection is there. Free teaching materials for using Science Friday to teach in your classrooms. Just click on the For Teachers button on the page. Have a great weekend. If you're celebrating Hanukkah, have a happy Hanukkah to you. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.